All right, I'd like to call the meeting to order.
All right.
Emily, if you would do a ten.
Boyd Frederick.
Here.
John Poole.
Here.
John Franco.
Here.
Andy Berg.
Here.
David Hallman.
Present.
Aaron Decker.
Here.
Michael Skalitsky.
You can touch me.
All right.
It may be in my inbox. I haven't had a chance to look in the last few hours.
All right.
And also.
Oh.
Hello, dear.
Say your names, please.
Alexander here.
I'm Helen Kaffner.
Okay, thanks. All right.
Any citizens' comments? Do you have anything to tell us, or?
All good.
Citizens' comments? All right, citizens' comments closed. Chair's comments? Real quick, unless this committee is handed something in for the October meeting with all the other meetings we have to do, I will not have it. So unless the chair sends something to us, then we don't have to worry about that. And then we're gonna have probably a little longer meeting in November after the election, so it's sort of a, where are we sitting now afterwards? Any supervisor comments? John, do you want to introduce yourself?
I can do that.
By the way, did everyone get the message from Mr. Cardamone about what's going on with the rules? It's just, Corp Counsel's just a little bit busy right now from what, so we'll be going over that in the August meeting. So, John, if you want to start.
All right, I'm gonna stand, so nobody, I might have my back to you. I'll just stand in this corner here a little bit.
Well, you trust me that much?
I trust you that much, so. First of all, Kyle Christensen is our Government Affairs Director, and he apologizes that he had something last minute that came up, and he asked me if I would come in and stand in for him this evening. So I'm happy to do that. I'm maybe a little bit rusty on some of the legislative issues. I used to be the legislative director. Kyle used to work for me. Then several years ago, one of the things I said when I moved from the insurance side of things at WCA to the legislative side was I wanted to do more outreach with the counties. I believe that we needed to spend more time in the counties. Not everybody gets to serve on our board of directors. Not everybody gets to make it to our conferences. They can't make our educational seminars and so forth. So I felt it was really important to spend more time in the counties. And I'm a former county board member. I served for four terms in Manitowoc. I was county board chair and administrative coordinator. At that time, you could do that. We didn't have an executive. Now they do. I served as county board chair, and we got more actively involved in with WCA as a county. We weren't real active at first, and I always said, if you know, to see the real value in the association, you need to get involved. I remember when I was legislative director, the first time that I came down here, and I don't remember what supervisor it was, but one of the county board supervisors here in Kenosha County thanked me and said, we haven't seen someone from WCA in over 20 years come to our county for a board meeting. And I said, we need to change that. And I know since that, I've been back several times, and Kyle's been here, and I think others have as well. So we work for you. And so when there's something that we can do, please let us know. So my role shifted more away from legislative matters to outreach. And I do a lot of training. I still do some legislative updates, not near as much as I did before. But I do a lot on roles and responsibilities, running effective meetings, parliamentary procedure. I do another PowerPoint on county budgeting, especially some of the smaller counties when they have significant turnover. They ask us to come in and do that. I do another one on the value in the process of strategic planning. We're looking at getting more into succession planning because as I travel the state, we're hearing more and more that it's more difficult to hire key people for your departments. The pool of people that are applying, especially right now in law enforcement, there's a lot less people than what we've seen before. But when you get to your key department heads, it's really, really difficult. So I'm there, we don't charge anything. All you have to do is get me on the calendar. We'll find a time that works. And anything that we can do for you or for the staff, we're more than happy to do that.
When you say charge anything, why don't you go over the fact that we pay dues?
We do, and I thought maybe what I do, and we have time here now, or I understand I've got about 5 minutes for the board meeting, and I thought maybe I would do a little bit of that at the board meeting.
Okay,
but I can do it now if you want me to.
No, I was gonna say for this committee, When you say you don't charge anything, actually there is sort of a charge.
There is. We have about 15% of our total revenue for WCA is made up of membership dues. So we have roughly $650,000 worth of our dues. Comes from counties, and it's based on population. Milwaukee County, of course, pays the most. They're about $44,000. I think our smallest county is paying in the neighborhood of $700. But we have not had a dues increase since 2001, since Mark O'Connell became the executive director, and he has no intentions of ever raising the dues to the counties. So we also have a for-profit arm, which is WCA Services, Inc. And through that for-profit arm, we do things not only for counties, but for cities, villages, school districts, tech colleges. We have more resources than, for example, the Wisconsin Towns Association and the League of Municipalities, which I'm a member of as well. I'm also the mayor in Verona, so I'm a member of the League and familiar with what they do. And the league and the towns will just say, well, you guys have more resources. So in areas where we aren't competitive with something that they're already doing, we help them out as well. And we can do some training. We offer programs. There's the Boston Whole Life Mutual Insurance Company. We just authorize and have an agreement in place now with, when you think of enterprise, you think of enterprise rental cars. We just formalize an agreement with them now where they'll come in and they'll manage your fleets. And I know one of our counties, I forget which one it was, maybe Marathon County, just signed up on a pilot process with them. And I think four of the cars that they have now are through Enterprise, and they manage everything from the maintenance to they analyze on an ongoing basis when it makes the most sense for you to replace those vehicles. You know, sometimes people say, well, we're going to lease the vehicles, but you know, we're going to, in 4 years from now, we're going to replace them. They will tell you if it makes sense to do it before that, after that. They just manage that whole operation. So we do those types of things. We work with the private sector companies that can help counties and municipalities and school districts do their jobs better and more cost effective. With some of those groups, we share some revenue. We get some commissions. That's why we don't have to raise our WCA dues. So a significant amount of money comes in from the oversight of the three insurance companies that we have, and then we have some from these other vendor relationships. But we're under 14-15% right now in membership dues. So we hear that a lot from the legislature. For example, we have a statewide radio system where we advertise and we talk about what services county government does around the state. Sometimes legislators will say to us, well, why are you spending taxpayer dollars on that? Well, it's not taxpayer dollars. We're funding that with the other programs that we're doing. So we're very comfortable where we are with what we pay dues. We're hoping we can reduce it, but we have no intention of increasing it. And a little history, when I was county board chair in 1990, I served on what was then called the WCA Audit and Dues Committee, and we made a recommendation to the board of directors as to what the dues should be. In 1990, we were very, very proud that we said, we finally were under 50% of our budget came from county dues, from taxpayer dollars. That was 1990, and today we're at below 15%. So we're pretty proud of that. But great question. So Kyle put this together. So I'm going to try and run through just an overview, a couple things to talk about, the 2015-16 session highlights, a little bit on what we're seeing for the 2016 election. 2017-2018 session expectations, some things that we've heard, some things we think may happen, and then a little bit on what are the state budget priorities for WCA. So starting with the 2015-16 session, Kyle says in one word, it's really reform. And we'll talk about this in one of the upcoming slides, where when you get the governor's office and both houses controlled by the same party, they see this now as maybe not once in a lifetime, but an opportunity where they can really do some reform. But they really don't talk a lot about what their reform is. And I know when the word reform came out 2 years ago in the budget, we asked the question, you know, what are you talking about? Are you looking at local government and you're going to try and reform what we're doing? Which we thought was sort of a joke because we do a better job in local government than the state does on their own. And they indicated to us that most of the reform that they were looking for 2 years ago during that budget cycle was really reforming state government and not local government. And we had one of the governor's staff people that came in and spoke to us, one of their policy folks, a little over a year ago. And they said to us that combining and merging departments, even within state government, they found out that's a lot more difficult than what they thought it would be. It's not that easy. It's pretty complicated. So what were some of the major reforms that they did in the last two-year cycle? You know, they're here. I think you're familiar with them. They did repeal the local prevailing wage rate. They passed the right to work legislation. They had the expansion of school choice and vouchers, which again cost some additional dollars, took some money out of the state coffers for the rest of us. Local land use authority decisions and personal property rights, a big issue with shoreline zoning all over the state, probably more impact in northern Wisconsin, but it doesn't impact all over the state. And then a big one for them was a transition from the Government Accountability Board sort of back to what they had before, with two separate bodies and running that. And it was interesting because when they created the Government Accountability Board, that was done under the Republicans, they bragged nationwide about how great it was going to be. And now a couple years later, they're going back to what they had before. And it actually now, the separate board that takes a look not at the lobbying issues but at election type issues are made up now again of partisan people. So it'll be real interesting to see how that moves forward. So what is the catalyst for reform for the state of Wisconsin? You've got large Republican majorities in the legislature, and again the governor Walker is Republican. So part of it is that you've got these large majorities. They think that they can do everything, that they have the ability to do it. And I will say that for us in local government, and really for almost any lobbying group, the best scenario for us is if you have a split legislature, or if both houses are the same party, than if the governor is from the opposite party. We all say they can do less damage. But here they've got significant majorities in the state legislature. I was elected to Sergeant-at-Arms for the Senate in January of 1994, and I served in that capacity for 9 years. I was with WCA. I left. I was Sergeant-at-Arms for 9 years. I was the first Sergeant-at-Arms that survived a switch in the majority at the state capitol. I'm very, very proud of that. And the individual who was in that capacity and followed me has done the same thing. So I'm number one, number two, as far as not being replaced when the majority's changed. The entire time that I was there, the majority was 17-16, either Democrat or Republican. And it was really tough on the majority party because they had to keep everybody within their party in line. Now, with the Senate is 19-14, they can have some stragglers that don't necessarily agree with them and vote the other way. But I can remember one meeting specifically when I was in Washington, D.C., and it was the Democrats were in the majority. It was 17-16. Senator Quayle was the majority leader, and Gary George, a senator from Milwaukee at the time, former senator, we were at this meeting in Washington, D.C. Mike Ellis was the minority leader, and he was trying his hardest. He said, he told everybody to leave. They were sort of socializing. He said, everybody leave except Gary. Gary, you and I need to talk, and John, I need a witness. So I was there. It was a very interesting conversation where Mike Ellis was trying to convince Gary George to switch parties. There was no way that Gary George was going to switch parties, but he was holding out on a lot of votes. So he really, for a long time, he was controlling a lot of things in the state Senate because they needed, the Democrats needed his vote. Again, it's the now or never sentiment in the legislature. And then I would say a new era of politics. And what we mean by that is I started working in the Capitol on behalf of Manitowoc County in the mid-80s. And it was very different in the Capitol than it is today. You have 99 people in the state assembly, 33 senators. Then they allowed people to think, and do what they wanted to do. Now it's really everything is controlled by the leadership. Doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican. Everything is really controlled by leadership. And an example of that is I was attending an annual meeting last year. I was attending an annual meeting for one of the regional planning commissions, and one of the members on joint finance, a Republican member of joint finance, was sitting right behind me. I got a text that they had just come to an agreement on the state budget. So I handed my phone to that member of joint finance, and he looked at, he read it, and he looked at me, and he said, how is it possible that you can get that before I even know that they came to an agreement? So it's just, you know, one more thing to prove that leadership controls everything. They really do. And I think that's unfortunate. Until we get, you know, until we get away from that, we're going to continue to have problems. Kyle put this slide in on Act 10, and we think it's something important to point out. You know, there's still a lot of people that are angry about Act 10, but as far as people that actually are elected and work in the Capitol, certainly Governor Walker is still there. You know, he survived the recall attempts. But when you take a look at the legislature, a third of the Senate, or almost a third, 10 of 33 senators were elected after Act 10. 56, over half of the 99 representatives were elected after Act 10. So in their mind, Act 10 is forgotten. They moved on to other things. And in fact, when we look at the turnover in the state legislature, a lot of those people, especially in the assembly, that ran to get elected, they ran because they were excited about what Act 10 was going to be and what it was going to do in the state. And they have already retired or will be retiring in the very near future. They feel that their work is accomplished. So while there's still a lot of people that are talking about Act 10, the actual elected officials in state government, they've moved beyond that. They really have. So let's talk a little bit about some of the county highlights. When it comes to the last budget, I know we wish that we could have done better, but when we take a look at how we compare to others, both in the public sector and in the private sector, counties really did very well. We did not experience any reductions in funding. Other groups did. The schools, the UW system, $250 million for the UW system. I represent all 72 counties on a steering committee that's taking a look at the reorganization of UW Extension. And that $250 million cut to the university is a major, major cut. And then what a lot of people don't realize is that you've got your specialists and educators that work at the Madison campus, but then every one of the four-year campuses also have extension employees there. But most people don't realize that we have extension specialists and agents in every one of our 72 counties. And we pay for that. We pay for 40% of their salaries. We pay for 40% of their fringe benefits. We pay for the facilities. A lot of people don't realize that. So that was a major, major hit to us. And it'll be interesting to see how that all works out. The road builders had cuts. The operating engineers had cuts. And certainly the state agencies had cuts. So when it comes to the funding side of things, county government overall did pretty well. I'm going to quick run through all the, and I'll take questions at any time throughout the process if you have more on the end, whatever you
prefer. Anybody who has a question, just ask. I mean, when you're talking about extension, Supervisor Decker is the chair of the committee that covers part of the extension.
I heard that the UW extension, UW cuts were 8%.
Overall, it depends which county. There are certain counties
overall, it was 8%.
Yeah, but some counties are impacted a lot more. I've got a spreadsheet that I can get you, and it tells you every county how much they're cut by. So, you know, for example, La Crosse County, they've been the most vocal county regarding the cuts to UW Extension. Their cut to their cut that they'll get is $18,000. So Steve O'Malley, the county administrator, is saying, I'll find that 18. He's telling the university, he's telling me, I'll find that $18,000. I'll pay for that. I'd gladly pay for that. But the rest of the counties aren't. You're going to have some very small counties that are paying over $200,000 in levy, or even a lot more than that. Some of the bigger ones are. So it's not the same across the state. And that's part of the problem. So I'd be more than happy when we're done here. I'll talk to you a little bit more about extension if we have time. Because the committee that I serve on is a steering committee, is made up of 12 extension university folks and me. And I'm supposed to represent all 72 counties. And frankly, they're listening to what we're saying and capture some of the details. I will tell you that they are out, the sponsors, which is Rick Clemmie and Aaron Brower and the person who's the head of all the finances for UW Extension, they're going out and meeting with counties about their new proposal. But we are also having a meeting next week, Tuesday, where I suggested to Chancellor Sandin, bring a small group of county executives and county administrators together, because the counties are extremely upset about what's happening. Bring them together, see if we can work out some compromise. If we can't, you can go back to doing your study, which, by the way, the working groups are going to, they'll work through June of next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a huge supporter of Extension. I always was when I was a farmer and I was on the county board. But they're doing a very poor job, and they acknowledge that, of communicating. So they asked the counties for input back in September and October, and they gave them a December deadline. They've had over 40 telephone calls, emails, resolutions, memos against the cuts to UW Extension, and to this day, not a single one has been responded to. And that's a
mess. Right, that's what I'm saying is that the UW cuts were 8%, and it seems like they whacked the extension.
Absolutely.
Disproportionately.
I would agree with you. I would agree. So, but I'd be more than happy to talk to you through a little more about that later if we have time. So I'm going to run through the steering committees. We have six different steering committees at WCA and hit some highlights from each one of them. A couple things that we were able to get is additional flexibility with the levy limit carryover. We kept telling the legislature, if you're going to cut us for shared revenue and you're not going to give us, you know, a reasonable amount for general transportation aids and other revenue, at least give us some flexibility within our own budgets. What they were actually doing was, we told the Finance Committee especially, what you're doing is you're encouraging your local units of government to always spend to the max. So the ones that are responsible and aren't going to the max, sorry about that, the ones that aren't going to the max, they're spending it. So let them, if there's a good reason where they don't have to go to the maximum, that they can go back a couple of years and have the flexibility to use that carryover that they didn't use. It took a long time for us to convince the legislature that that was a good idea, but we did get some flexibility. And we're continuing to hammer home that point to the legislators and to the governor's office that if you're not going to give us more money and you're going to continue the levy limits, I mean, levy limits are here to stay. And I'd say even if the Democrats were to take over the majority, we believe levy limits are here to stay. So give us some flexibility in how we can operate within those levy limits. There was some clarification on special charges and special assessments. There was not a lot of money, not a significant amount of money, but there was money in the managed forest land, what they call closed acreage fees, and the counties and the towns did a lot of work in that area, but all the money went to the state. We were able now to get that money split between the counties and the towns. It made a lot of sense. On the sales tax exemption for local government, in the past, if you were building a public structure, some type of a public facility, the county, or if it was a city or a village, you could buy everything that you needed for that facility without paying any taxes, but the county had to actually make the purchase, the contractor could not. We got the law changed, so now if you're building a facility in Kenosha County, whoever your general is on that project, he or she or their firm, they can order everything on behalf of the county and still be tax exempt. So that was a fairly significant change. It made construction projects easier. And then a little bit of flexibility in publication of the legal notices. And that's always a negotiation between the local units of government and the Wisconsin Newspaper Association. But we did get some flexibility there.
Expand on that, because that's been brought up in our county board meeting before about we're sort of stuck with the Kenosha News.
Yes.
Doing that, and explain what that flexibility is now.
I actually don't know what the new flexibility is, and Kyle wasn't sure when him and I talked about that either. Okay. But I can get that answer, and we will share it with you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, on the transportation, we were able to, in the prior biennium, in the second year of the budget, they increased our general transportation aids and the aids for mass transit by 4% in the second year of the budget, and 1% for the elderly and disabled funds. We were able to have that second year of the biennium become the new base moving forward. It was their intent to go back and reduce that 4% and the 1% for elderly and disabled. So that the second year of the prior biennium with the 4% included. And then WCA also worked very hard on getting legislation passed on banning the use of handheld cellular phones in work zones. And that was because within that two-year cycle, we actually had three county highway workers that were killed, accidents in construction zones. County organization and personnel, there was the repeal of the local prevailing wage law. We're hearing that there may be something on a statewide basis coming up for state. What they did here was just for the locals on prevailing wage, so we need to keep an eye on that. The local register of deed office is allowed to issue all vital records. So what that means is, let's say that you were born in Kenosha County, so your birth certificate would be here, but you moved to a different county. Let's say you moved to Waukesha County. If you needed to get a replacement for your birth certificate or any other vital record, either you had to come back to Kenosha County or you could go to Dane County and get it. What this law, the change is, now you can go anywhere. So if you move from Kenosha, you were born in Kenosha, you could go to, now you're living in Waukesha County, you could go there and get your birth certificate rather than having to come back here or go to Dane County. And then there were several changes to the county veteran services officers, and we were able to get that defeated as well. Worked very closely with the governor's staff on that. On the ag, environment, and land use, certainly we know that there were a lot of changes to county shoreline zoning. Just another example of what's happening where they're taking away local control. We're concerned every time, and we're very vocal with the legislature and the governor's office every time they take control away from us. There was additional funding for county land conservation staffing and cost sharing grants. Several years ago, there was a cut. We were able to lobby. We found some carryover dollars that we could use, and we've actually been able to increase the base in that regard, and that continues as it was in the prior budget. Actually, it's a little bit more than what it was in the prior budget. The third one there, eliminating a permit requirement for local culvert replacement. In the past, if you were going to replace a culvert on one of your own highways, the county highways, you would have to get approval from DOT to do that. We got the law changed to say that if you're not increasing the diameter of the culvert, there's no permit required. You can just go ahead and do it. And that, when you think about how many culverts there might be statewide in county government, that was, you know, was significant. And then there was, they defeated the short-term rental on Airbnb. And again, in our opinion, that's a local control issue. We should let the locals decide how they want to regulate Airbnb. We're willing to bet something will come back on that, but we were able to get that defeated in the last election, or in the last cycle. Judicial and public safety, there was some additional funding for county and probation and parole holds, not a lot. There was a little bit of additional funding. We maintained the amount that we had for circuit court funding, and then we received additional money for the TAD as the alcohol and drug abuse diversion programs, TAD. So 2 years prior, we were able to get a significant amount of money increased in that area for TAD, and I think over half of the counties now have a TAD program. And do you have a TAD program here in Kenosha County? I would assume you probably do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're probably going to have a webinar on that soon. Chippewa County is doing just a fantastic job with their TAD program. Health and Human Services, the governor had proposed in the budget some significant changes to family care. We were able to fight off a lot of those changes. And just recently, before Secretary Kitty Rhodes passed away, the agency put out a memo saying that they were backtracking on the waiver that they were trying to get approval from the federal government. They withdrew that. We defeated some proposed changes to the ADRCs throughout the state. We doubled county fraud funding for Medicaid and food share. And I say we, the county's association. They fully funded comprehensive community services at a cost of $26 million. I don't know the details on that. Certainly Sarah in our office would. And then there was the attempt to move the 17-year-old offenders to the juvenile justice system. And just to be clear on WCA's stance on that is, we believe that that's the right thing to do. But if they shift that from the state to the counties, and those 17-year-old juvenile defenders are in the county system, I know it's over, I think for Milwaukee County alone, it's about a $10 million expense. So we're saying, we support it, but you need to give us the funding. If you're not going to give us the funding, we will continue to oppose it.
I believe the Kenosha County hit would have been about $300,000. So that would have been a significant hit to the levy.
Yeah.
If it would have come down here.
So that's WCA's position on that. So a couple of takeaways from what we just went through. Overall, we said it was a positive session for counties. Some people we need to work with what we have, and overall we think we did a pretty good job considering and compared to the private sector and other local units of government. We were successful in defeating attempts to push additional costs to the locals, concerned with efforts to preempt local control, and you see a number of different issues there where that occurred, and we will continue to fight any time to take away local control. So let's talk a little bit about where we are, what we're thinking with the election coming up. If you take a look at the state Senate, it's a 33-member body. There's currently 19 Republicans, 14 Democrats. That's the widest majority that any party has had in quite some time. The 33 members of the Senate serve four-year staggered terms. So this year, there's 16 members up for re-election. It's the even-numbered senators. It just so happens that there's 8 Republican seats up for re-election and 8 Democratic seats up for re-election. 3 senators have announced that they're not seeking re-election. That's Senator Gudex. He represents the Fond du Lac, Oshkosh area, and Senator Harris Stodd and Senator Mary Lozick. So 2 Republicans, 1 Democrat have announced not running for re-election. What do we expect there? Well, the seats certainly. The Senate District 18th is where Senator Gudex is in the Oshkosh area. We believe that that would be a very close race and could go to the Democrats. It's very possible that district had been a Republican-leaning district for a long time. In the last, I would say, the last 15 years or so, it has become much more of Democrat. I shouldn't say, it's still slightly higher Republican, but it's become a lot closer. The 12th Senate District is a very interesting one, which is, it's about 13 counties. It's northeast Wisconsin, very northern east Wisconsin, and that's Senator Tom Tiffany, who is a Republican, and he is the author of the Shoreland Zoning legislation. His district is very upset with him and taking away local control. It's a major, major issue up there. He is the incumbent. I think he may have a slight advantage, but we do believe that that is a seat that the Democrats could pick up. So most observers do not expect that the Republicans are going to lose the Senate. It's 19-14 now, but we believe that the Democrats will pick up at least one seat, maybe 2. Go ahead.
What about the seat that could become available around the Green Bay area, depending on how the congressional elections go up there?
Again, we think that that could be a close race, but at this point, we don't know who would be in the race. It'll make a big,
Well, no, the fact that I was going to say, what happened is, around the Green Bay area, there's a gentleman who's in the Senate that's in the primary
Senator Lassay, and his election is not up this year. He's Senate District 1.
But if he were to win, then that would be...
If he were to win, it would be a special election. Mm-hmm. That area definitely leans more Republican than Democrat. I'm not saying that a Democrat couldn't win, but it definitely leans more Republican. The interesting thing about that one, though, is Frank Lassay, who's currently in the legislature, is a cousin to Alan Lassay, who was in the Senate for a long time. If Frank Lassay, in my opinion, is not WCA's position, but opinion, in my opinion, if Frank would have been running completely on his own, I don't know if he would have won, but he had the name of Lassay. Alan was very well respected. Frank is not so much, respected. So I think he was riding in on Alan's coattails there. Going to the State Assembly, it's a 99-member body, 63 Republicans, 36 Democrats. That is the the most significant majority that any party has held since 1957. So the Republicans have a wide gap there. All 99 members are up for re-election. It's a two-year cycle for all of them. You can see here all the legislators that have announced that they're not seeking re-election. There's, of that group, two of them are Democrats, the rest are Republicans. So what are we expecting there? Most observers do not expect the GOP to lose the assembly majority. I think that's highly, highly, highly unlikely. But we also expect Democrats to gain seats in the state assembly in the upcoming election. So what are some of our expectations for what we'll see in the next two-year cycle? We believe that they will continue to say that they're going to reform government. And again, what that all means, we don't know. Probably more than anything, it's going to be reforming what they do at the state level. But of course, that could impact us. Transportation funding, that remains the 800-pound gorilla. Governor Walker has made it very clear that he would not support any new revenues, any fees or tax increases related to transportation unless they were offset somewhere else. We just don't know how that's possible and where it's possible to find the additional money. We continue to push for increased revenue sources. We believe that the commission that was established, that Secretary Gottlieb headed and Craig Thompson from the TDA, a former WCA employee, and others were on, they had some really, really good ideas. And we cannot continue as a state without some increases. And it's not just for our highways. You know, it's the bridges, it's the airports, it's the harbors, it's mass transit, it's elderly and disabled transportation. So as an association, we are more than 100% behind supporting additional increases in funding. We believe it will happen. I think it's September 29th, where there will be town hall meetings going on in all 72 counties at the same time. And we are doing this in conjunction with the League of Municipalities and the Towns Association to get the community behind the Just Fix It campaign and getting some additional revenues for transportation. And mainly to put pressure on the governor, because it's really, when it comes to transportation, it's the governor that's holding us back on this. Privately, we are hearing from legislators and on the Republican side that they are willing to see fee increases and tax increases that would go to transportation funding. They're seeing their own roads that are falling apart and their own bridges that are falling apart in their districts. So privately, they're telling us that they're agreeing to do something. We need to put pressure on the governor. And it's interesting, I think part of the governor's strategy, he's not real happy with some folks right now who were vocal in his short term while he was running for president on people that normally be supporting the governor weren't supportive of him when he was running for president, and they talked about that he wasn't willing to do anything on transportation. So the governor is strategizing right now, and from what we're hearing, he's pretty much telling the road builders, who have been huge supporters of the governors, the Republican governors in the past, the operating engineers who support our efforts because it puts their people to work. What we're hearing, but we don't know for sure, is that the governor said to them, we're going to find money for local units of government, but we're taking it from the road builders and the operating engineers and some of these other folks that were getting money in the past. So it'll be really, really interesting, but in local government, we just can't stand by and wait and see what's going to happen. We have to be part of that conversation. We have to put pressure on them. That way, we have to do something. And I will tell you, I traveled to all 72 counties, and what I hear from counties that are not in Southeast Wisconsin, they're criticizing Southeast Wisconsin and saying that's where all the money has been going. We defend that by saying that Southeast Wisconsin is the engine for the entire state of Wisconsin, and we need to make sure that Southeast Wisconsin is successful. But that conversation outstate is going on is, why is all the money going to Southeast Wisconsin? That's got to stop. And the Joint Finance Committee was even thinking about in their last deliberations about putting an actual delay on all projects in Southeast Wisconsin, stopping what's already in place. That would be disastrous. And we can't allow that to happen. Tax reform and reduction, what they see in state government, and we talked a little bit about that before. We expect, even though we were able to stop some of the changes in family care, we expect that there will be some, probably in the governor's budget, and if not there, probably in the Joint Finance Committee, some new provisions on family care. We're also expecting very little growth in tax dollars and new revenues coming into the state. We believe that there will be some reductions in certain parts of state government to fund the growing Medicaid problem. I mean, that is, we have to pay that. There's no choice. Our Medicaid expenses are going up. We have an aging population. We're getting less and less money from the federal government when it comes to Medicaid. We have to fund those programs. We have no choice. And certainly the governor, you know, he's shifting his efforts to what appears to be a re-election mode. What are our priorities? We recently met with all the county executives and administrators were invited. It was actually their meeting, and we participated in that. Our whole ledge team was there. Mark was there. Mike Blask and I were there. And one of the things we stressed is, it is really the second point here. Well, the first point, we all know how we feel about transportation, and we're going to continue to push that as hard as we can. But we said to the county executives and administrators, please come up with ideas for us that would allow us flexibility in our county operations and doesn't cost the state any money. Let's work on that as hard as we possibly can so that we get something out of this. We do expect that something will come back on the 17-year-old juvenile offenders. 911 funding, if you remember, those of you that have been on the board for a while, we had lobbied successful several years ago to put an additional 75-cent charge on every mobile device, and that money was supposed to go to mainly to counties, but to other municipalities to help fund their 911 operations. We were very pleased that we were able to successfully lobby for that. Last minute, Governor Doyle took that money and put it into the general fund to fill a hole that they had. So if we were to get that 75-cent back, I mean, it's not going to happen. But we've been attempting to do that. I think it's 6 years or something like that, at least 6 years ago when that happened. We've been trying to get it back, and we just can't get it back. They know it's a problem. They just don't know how to fix it, because if they give us that money, which is in the neighborhood of 50-some million dollars that we had lobbied for, successfully got it, and then they use it to plug a hole in their own budget. But you know, we're still continuing to work on that. I just today, when I was going to a meeting at WEDC, I ran into the executive director of the telcos, we call them, the small telephone companies in the state of Wisconsin, and I asked him, because I've been working with emergency government directors that are telling me about a new federal mandate that's coming down on, they call it the copper system, which is the old system right now that a lot of municipalities are using for their 911 centers. I have been told by the emergency government directors that after 2020, those old copper systems won't work. The person I talked to today from the telcos told me he's got a letter from the federal government that's saying it's actually 2017. So we need to know that, because Dane County told me that to go to the new system, that would be the newest technology right now that's out there, because a copper system won't work, is 18 cents per capita per month. So, you know, figure that out for, I don't know what your total population is. City of Kenosha is about 100,000, right?
168 in the county.
About 168. Mm-hmm. So 168 times 18 times 12 is what your cost, is what they're estimating your cost to be with this once the copper system is gone. So we're on top of that to try and get that letter to find out where that's really at, because 2017 is less than 6 months away. And I think that gets me to the end. I'm happy to answer any questions that I
can. What's that come to?
So you talked about transportation funding. Specifically, what were you guys, as you're lobbying or as you're presenting, what was your solution? Because the other slide up there talking about stagnating revenue, a lot of that has to do with not business growth. There's a reason for that also.
Right, right. Well, certainly we would support an increase in the gasoline sales tax. We believe, we lobbied against when they got rid of the indexing. We lobbied against that. We said that that was a bad idea. The problem with increasing the sales tax, and I don't deal with these issues every day now like I used to, you could increase the gasoline sales tax by 10 cents, and it wouldn't come anywhere near to filling the hole that we have, the deficit spending that we have in transportation. We're also concerned, and the taxpayers are concerned about borrowing for a lot of the big projects. We don't see that as a real good solution as well. But we believe that there are other ways. There are people, there's people that are willing. We really haven't found many people around the state that will not support a fee or a tax increase if they know that the money is going to go with transportation. And if you explain to them that usually the number one issue that businesses talk about when they're looking at economic development is the infrastructure. If the infrastructure is not there and the utilities aren't there, they're not going to come where you want them to be. So we need to continue to, you know, to tell them to do that. I don't know. I think that it's possible that if they prioritize some of the things that they're doing within DOT, that there could be some cost savings and efficiencies there. But we are open. You know, we're open to if, let's say, for example, they decide they want to go with tollways. We're open to that, but that's at least a two-year approval process with the federal government. That's not going to happen overnight. But a lot of our members, when you see them, and you know, I've worked with WCA since late 1991, our members, for the most part, are on the conservative side. I have not really seen any of our members say, we cannot support new revenues for transportation. They get it. We have to do it. And if the state's not going to do it, then they have to give us an opportunity to do it. Now, not many counties have this option anymore, but Sheboygan County right now is debating whether or not to add the 0.5% sales tax. And they're saying that all the money raised would go to transportation, but in order to get approvals, because that Manitowoc, or Sheboygan, Manitowoc, Kewaunee, Brown County, all the way up in that area, none of them have the sales tax. None of them want to be the first ones. So the only way that they can get the referendum passed is if the county implements the 0.5% sales tax and then gives some of that 0.5% to each one of the municipalities within the county, and the county only gets to keep a portion of that. So we're open. You know, we're not saying that we have all the answers, but we know that there has to be more money for transportation.
Have you guys explored any options to spending cuts in other areas that then can be diverted over into transportation? And have you proposed any in that area?
We have not proposed any of that, and I can tell you from sitting in some of our WCA board meetings in the past, not this last time when we had the referendum on transportation, but the time before. Specifically, we had members that were on human services boards that said, we can't support this referendum because all the state's going to do is take it from human services programs and put it in transportation, and it really doesn't gain us anything. So we need to be careful about, you know, where we suggest that we take money if it's going to impact part of the other county budget. But again, we're open to, you know, we're open to everything, and we continue to tell DOT, you know, when you talk about accountability, we want our counties to be accountable. We support that. Don't go overboard with them and ask them for things that you don't need. But we want our counties to be accountable, and we're comfortable that our counties are comfortable. But we do believe that there could be some cost savings within DOT.
You're proposing moving 7 kilos back down in juvenile court. Statewide, what do you guys estimate the savings, or is that the intent, primarily is cost saving?
For the WCA supports the policy. We believe it's the right thing to do. So putting the 17-year-olds into the state prison system is very, very costly. That occurred when the Republicans took majority in the mid-90s, is when they decided that they were going to be tough on crime. I will tell you that my parents, I have five brothers and a couple adopted sisters, and Manitowoc County approached my parents in 1969, and we built onto our house. We had a 14-bedroom home. We had 9 juvenile delinquents that lived with us. Some of them were some pretty bad actors, but they didn't belong in state prison. They needed some treatment, and they needed intervention. And that's what WCA supports, that we do that. I mean, the really bad ones, yeah, there might be a few that are going to have to get locked up. There's no question about that. But it is very, very costly. One issue is the cost. The second issue is just policy. We believe that it's a better policy to give them the treatment closer to their family and intervene sooner. So we support that, but again, to make that shift from the state prison, statewide, from the state prison to the counties taking them all in-house is extremely expensive. And without any flexibility in our levy caps, there's just no way we could do it. Mr. Chairman, I've got more time, but I want to make sure that I'm respectful.
We go at 7:30, not 7.
Oh, okay.
So, I know Supervisor Berg was...
When you say it costs more money in to work in a prison, or to house a state adult facility, are you saying it costs more in an adult facility than it does a juvenile facility?
By far. I don't know what the exact dollars are, but it's... I think, if I remember right, that we were talking statewide over $20 million.
Well, what is it per individual?
I don't know offhand, but I can get that answer for you.
Because I mean, Sarah, I work for the DLC.
Would know from the top of her head.
I work for the DLC. I don't know if I've ever heard that before. Not saying you're wrong. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. But I know there's a lot more mandates that are that you have to do for kids. You know, that you don't have to do for adults, obviously.
Right. The other issue that we have, though, with the juvenile in the state facilities, as we've heard this over the years, the state encourages counties to try and keep as many of those juveniles back in their own district, but then they turn right around and say, oh, so now we have less people in our facilities. It still costs the state the same amount to do it, so the daily rate that we pay the state to house those juveniles becomes higher when we have less people in the state system.
Sure, sure.
I mean, that's understandable. But it is significantly more expensive to have them in a state facility than it is to have them in a county or a regional facility, by far.
Go ahead.
Just out of curiosity, what sort of deficit are we running when we have to pay for Medicaid in the state, roughly?
I probably could dig on my computer and find the exact number, but we're talking... It was over $200 million the last time that, you know, when I was heading up the legislative activities, it was over $200 million.
That we're paying that?
That we had a gap.
Okay.
Was budgeted to what we were paying.
Right.
So before they did anything else, so, you know, they were talking about, not this budget cycle, but the one before when it got all done,
mm-hmm.
They said we ended the state budget and it was like 970 some million dollars in the black they were. They were bragging about that. But what they didn't talk about was, here's how much they had deficit spending in Medicaid. Here's how much money they had borrowed for transportation projects that they didn't build into the budget and those kind of things. So by the time you took all those things, they made a commitment to the tech colleges that they were going to pick up some of their expenses. When you factored all those things in, they started that next budget, they were actually in a deficit. They weren't in the black.
What was the amount that the federal government was going to give to Wisconsin?
I don't know. Again, Sarah in our office is the human services expert. I don't know that number.
I believe it was more than $200 million.
I think it was, yeah. But those Medicaid costs are going to continue to go up significantly. Yeah. Significantly. So I hope this is somewhat what you were looking for. Again, if I can answer any other questions, I'd be happy to.
It's one thing, I'm familiar with WCA, but I didn't know how many of the other, because we've got two new supervisors on here, and David is actually on NACO there, and that way they get a good taste of what
Well,
we're spending the money on and what we're...
Sure. No, I can do that a little bit. I'll talk a little bit about WCA. If I get too winded here, just let me know, and you can stop me. So WCA was formed in 1935 by the legislature. And about the same time, the Towns Association and the League of Municipalities were formed. And really the reason why those three associations were formed, initially we were called the Wisconsin County Boards Association, but then leadership within our organization said WCA is not only for our elected officials, it's also for the staff that work within the counties. So the name was changed from Wisconsin County Boards Association to the Wisconsin Counties Association. And we've been in existence, like I said, since 1935. We have seven different districts around the state, and people get elected when we have the district meetings every 2 years following the spring elections for the county board. And those individuals then, they run for re-election. You're currently on our board now, aren't you, right?
No,
You were on the board.
I was on the board.
Was on the board. Again, I do more on the outreach. I don't attend the board meetings as much anymore. So we have district representation there. Our board is about 25 members. A few years ago, the board decided it would be a good idea if we had some staff representation on our board. So there's 5 constitutional officers within your county government, and they had 3 of the 5 on a rotating basis. So like the Clerks Association, they would say, here's our person we want to serve on the WCA board. Usually it was the president of their association. Same thing with the sheriffs and the register of deeds. We rotated, so 3 of the 5. We changed the bylaws last year. Now each one of those 5 will have a representative on the board. There are certain things that are, for certain counties, like Milwaukee County gets, because of their population, they have people get elected to the county board, or get elected, excuse me, to the WCA board, but then Milwaukee County and Dane County also have a direct appointment that they make. So they can pick anyone from their county board and say, you know, we want you to serve on the WCA board. So that's the board of directors. We have 6 different steering committees, which are really our policy committees. We bounce a lot of things off. It was the 6 committees that I mentioned here that I walked through. The steering committees meet 3 times a year. I don't know of anyone, as long as I've been involved with WCA, who has desired to be on a steering committee and did not get appointed. It's a matter of the president of the association making the appointment. The steering committees meet 3 times a year. Usually they meet either in Madison or in Stevens Point. I was at Taxation and Finance yesterday in Stevens Point. They meet 3 times a year, usually in January, then they meet again in either March or April, and then they have a 10-day window in July that they have to meet. And the reason for that 10-day window is there's a deadline when resolutions come from the counties that they want considered at our annual conference. So all those resolutions now have come in from the counties. We separate them by steering committee for issue items, and then we contact WCA staff, you know, let's say it's an environmental land issue. We'll talk to the land and water conservation folks. You know, we'll talk to anybody who might touch county land and conservation and ask them what their opinion is on that. Then we develop a staff position. We take it to our steering committees. They make a recommendation to the resolutions committee. The resolutions committee always meets in August. And then they take a stab on it and see what their recommendation is. Sometimes they refer it to the board of directors. Sometimes they recommend that we do not adopt it. Usually there's an adoption of the resolution, and then it goes to the WCA, to the board, or to the full convention, I should say, after that. Some people think that that's the only way to get a policy issue before the board of directors. That's absolutely not the case. So every one of the 7 districts have representation on the WCA board at any time throughout the year. If you can convince one of your district representatives to bring something to the board, it can go directly to the board and you do not have to wait for an annual conference. Our primary purpose as the association is to do lobby and research on behalf of county government. We also have 3 insurance companies. We have the Wisconsin County Mutual Insurance Company Corporation, which Kenosha County is not part of. You're with a competing company, and that's fine. They're a good company as well. Our county mutual insures 53 of the 72 counties in the state. They also have a wholly owned subsidiary, which is called Community Insurance Corporation. They do the same thing as far as liability, workers' comp, property insurance for cities, towns, villages, and schools. At one point, I don't know if we still are, but at one point on a per pupil basis, we were the largest liability insurer of schools in the state of Wisconsin. A lot of people don't realize that WCA does that, but we do. And then we have the WCA Group Health Trust. When I took over the insurance operations in 2002, we had 11 members or 11 counties that were involved in that healthcare trust. It was about a $19 million a year operation. Today, I don't know totally how many members we have, but I think it's about 55,000 bodies that we insure. I don't know how many county and school groups and city groups we have, but it's about 55,000 bodies, and it's about a $350 million a year operation. We do have revenue that comes in for the operation of those companies. It's very interesting. The companies have no employees, they own no facilities. There's the board of directors, and then there's somebody at WCA who oversees the corporate management of those companies. And then they also, that corporate management, and it's now Michael Lamont in our office. And so Michael works on a daily basis with all the vendors. Very low administrative costs because we contract for every service and don't own any buildings. And basically at the end of the year, once the claims are paid, we give money back to our insureds as a dividend, because we're not there, we're not a for-profit company, and we don't pay income taxes on that company. We're there to serve local units of government. So whatever we don't need in reserves, we get back. And the liability company's been in existence since 1987, the healthcare trust since 1991. Then I mentioned that we have the for-profit arm, WCA Services Inc. We have a couple people that, all of us do some work on that, but we have other people that are solely responsible for that. And we continue to look for new ways that we can help local units of government do their job easier, more effective, you know, save money. We're looking at those things all the time. We have about 19 employees. I can't remember if we're at 18 or 19 right now. We recently had a young woman that left and went back to Whitewater. We have two of our employees. One is Keith Langenhahn, who some of you may know, longtime county board member. He left about 5 years ago. He resigned as county board chair to come work for us. So he's one of our eyes and ears in northern Wisconsin. He works out of his home out of Wausau. And he attends a lot of meetings. And like I said, he's eyes and ears for us. And if there's concerns out there, usually gets back to me and say, John, such and such county needs help. You know, they want you to come up there. And then we have another person, Bill, who operates out of, he lives in the town of Minocqua, and he's the former county board chair as well, and a town chair. And he does a lot of our business and economic development type work. I do a lot of economic development work around the state. I annually attend every one of the regional planning commissions, at least once. There's 9 of them around the state. I do a lot of work with Extension. I do a lot of work with other groups that I go in and speak to, you know, with all the time. Let's see, other things about WCA, we're very active within NACO. We do not have 100% representation of counties in NACO, but we're close. I know there's one county right now that they have a new county administrator, and he didn't think it was worthwhile to pay I think it was $443 in dues. And I told him about the prescription drug discount card and other things that NACO has to offer that doesn't cost the county anything. And they save many, many times more than what their dues are. We try and do as much research as we possibly can for counties on whatever issue it might be. And I do some of that as well. I just need to make sure I get the rest of my work done. We're available during the day. We're available during evenings for committee meetings, board meetings. If you have, you know, if it's the Kiwanis or Chamber or whoever, and they want to learn more about local government or about what's going on in the Capitol, we don't restrict ourselves to just county government type work. Oh, I'm trying to think of what else. We're involved in a lot of things.
No, it was just because, nope, we hear it, yeah. WCA, but I don't think anyone could define what WCA is, that's right. One thing that would be a help.
No, it's really important. I mean, the relationships that we have, you know, not long ago, I was at a meeting. In fact, I met with Jim Cruiser here not long ago. I was meeting with him on an issue as well. But I went into a meeting in Racine County, and we were talking to county staff there, but they also had city staff there. And when the mayor walked in, He looked at me and he said, "What the hell are you doing here at this meeting?" Well, it was a joint effort between the Counties Association and the League of Municipalities. And I have the benefit of working for WCA and being a member of the League and being involved in county government for a long time. I know a lot of people around the state, all over. So it's I love what I'm doing. I love coming to these meetings, talking about local government. It's frustrating what I see as a local elected official. Every 2 years I have to run for re-election too. There's more and more people that just don't care for government at all. We're getting a bad rap. We take a look at favorability ratings on the national level. Congress is, you know, they hover between that 12 and 14%. state legislators are about 57%. Local government, we're nearly 70%. We wish we were at 100%, but we're about 70%. So we tell our federal delegates and state representatives, the public perceives us a lot better than they perceive you. You know, use us to your benefit, because we serve the same people. They might serve more than we do, but we serve the same people. One other thing I think that's important that I do want to mention is WCA is a nonpartisan organization. We do not make donations to candidates from any party. We do not do endorsements. When the Republicans are in control, we get criticized from the Democrats that we're too close to the Republicans. When the Democrats are in control, we get criticized by the Republicans, you know, the other way around. But we have very good relations with, it really doesn't matter who the governor's office is or state agencies. When I became legislative director, I felt that we were being more reactive than proactive. So we moved everything up a couple months, what we do. So by September 15th, in the budget year, like it's coming up, by September 15th, all the secretaries of each one of the state agencies, they need to submit to the governor what their proposed budget is for the agency departments. Then the governor takes a look at that. So we try and get as many things in. We talk to the secretary, like the 911 issue, we're talking to DOA there, Department of Administration. We're trying to convince the secretary to get something included in his budget to the governor, because if the secretary, the cabinet secretaries are behind it, and then it gets in the governor's budget, it's highly likely that something's going to pass. But it used to be that in November of this year, we would determine what our legislative priorities were. That's way too late, because all the state agencies have their priorities or their budget materials into the governor. So we've moved all that up, and at the August board meeting is when the board officially takes action on what our priorities are. But we've been lobbying on those issues, you know, really for a long time. But the board will then meet, and they try and, we may have 100 issues, and they try and narrow them down to 10 or so. If we give the legislature more than that, they just sort of laugh at us. And, you know, for years we had the problem where the legislature would tell us, well, the towns come in and they want more money for road aids, and they want you to pass legislation that doesn't allow cities and villages to annex their property. That's really their own, you know, two issues. And then the cities and villages would come in with a couple issues, and county government would come up with 100, you know, issues. We do so many things. So it was really difficult. So we really, not that we don't lobby on the other issues, but we go in and we tell them, these are our 10 priorities for the next 2-year cycle. Doesn't mean we can't lobby on other issues, but they know that these are the priorities.
Is there any other questions that the committee has? I did make one mistake at the start of the meeting, is I didn't ask for approval of the minutes. Is
that on the agenda?
Mm-hmm. Was that?
What?
Emily, was that
on the agenda?
Yes, it was.
It was there.
I skipped over that.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Oh, wait, I can't second.
Yeah. I'll second.
Sorry, that's right.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Youth and governance? Aye.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Anything else come before the committee this evening? Could I get a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of the motion, state aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? See you in 20 minutes.
See
you. Don't worry. There's something for you. I don't know. Every county has something that works for